It's that time of the week where we speak to the former Leeds United chairman, Ken Bates, and he joins me on the line now. KB, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good, good. And plenty to get through this week. Lots of news regarding Leeds United and issues surrounding the club.
Yes, well, the first thing is that the chap called Mark Taylor, who's a lawyer, who used to act for Leeds United when I was chairman, and he did some work for us in November, December 2012. The bill wasn't due payable until, obviously, January, February 2013. Now, GFH, who, of course, consistently didn't pay anybody, they could avoid it, just ignored his bill, whatever he tried to do. And I met, when I met Massimo Cellino on the 1st of August in London, when we resolved our differences in our standing from GFH days, we resolved in 10 minutes. I then raised the subject of Mark Taylor, and having been owed £45,000 in 2 years, and Massimo said, if we take 40, I'll pay him now. So I rang Mark Taylor, he accepted it. I thought that was the end of the matter. Unfortunately, it hasn't been paid. So what Mark Taylor then did, he petitioned the court to bankrupt Leeds City Holding, which is the last resort if nothing else, you can't get anywhere. And it was last week. It was put back, it was deferred because of the court was busy, put it back until Monday, this Monday, last Monday, you know, Monday this week. And nobody turned up from Leeds United, either last week or this week, for the hearing, even though all the proper notice had been served. So the judge wound up Leeds City Holdings and appointed the official receiver as liquidator. So what's going to happen now, I've no idea. There's another bit of aggravation that the Leeds fans and the Leeds club didn't need, all for £40,000, plus cost now, of course. But there's a twist to this tale, because in June last year, somebody subscribed for 4 million new shares in direct into Leeds United at £2 a share, i.e. put £8 million into the club. Great. Now, when you do that, you're supposed to file a return at Companies House to say that's what you've done within 14 days. So though the transaction was done in June 2014, they didn't file the return, the notice, until January this year, 2015. And 6 months until 2 weeks. There's a further twist of the tale. Within a fortnight of giving the notice that you increased the capital, you were supposed to file a return saying who owns the shares. Well, after a month, they said I haven't filed the notice. And I understand, this is Taylor again, trying to inspect the record, which you're allowed to do under some law, and Leeds United are blocking that as well, even though they've now got a court order. So just chaos at Elland Road. I don't see the point of it, and just again more aggravation for a club staff that I think has got plenty more to do, plenty better things to do. So they are, Leeds City Holding is now in liquidation, and it would appear that Leeds United Football Club has got a new owner. Now then, it gets even more fun after this. We now come to David Haig, giving us information on other things that took place at Elland Road. Now, first of all, there's the outstanding case of Gwyn Williams being sacked in 2013. David Hay has managed to get get me copies of the internal emails. They went on. It's clear from this that they intended to sack both Sean Harvey and Williams for misconduct. They had any evidence to justify it. So going back, I'll try and read these out in date order. This is on the 23rd of... I don't forget, Sean Harvey then left. And they sacked Gwyn Williams in June. This is from Celine Patel to Hisham. But I didn't think all with Denton. Denton's firm of lawyers. And short conclusions follows. One, Gwyn, we should pay him tomorrow, otherwise we'll leave ourselves open for constructive dismissal, breach of contract. Before the next pay date, we need to find strong evidence of gross misconduct, otherwise we have to pay him as per the redundancy process. Two, Sean, we should pay him tomorrow, or the same above. If we can prove gross misconduct, we may be able to claw back some of the change of control provision. That was a payment that Sean Harvey got when GFA took over. Listen to this bit. Denton suggests investigating all his bank accounts to see if he's receiving bribes. Now that is illegal. It's a criminal offence. Now they're discussing it. And then Hisham replied to Salomon, it's all on 23rd of July last year. Subject of illegal cases. Very nice. What if sent them legal notice today for misconduct? Patel replies, even still, we need to pay them as regular until there's something concrete that can prove gross misconduct. By not paying, we trigger a process which was very damaging to the club. But Denton's partner described giving them a free hit if we don't pay. Dear, oh dear. Couldn't make it up. Then Hisham replies, we have a few things already. Best regards. And Patel replies, we talked through the items we have, but still need specific proof of Sean and Gwyn. So I'm turning the page sheet over. I'm reading from the email. Hisham then goes to Patel. List David put breach list for Sean and Gwyn for Denton draft letter to be issued today. And then Hisham sends a message to David Haig, says, based on the discussions taking place with Denton's, I believe we should stay with Gibson's, that's their then lawyers, Gibson Dunn, and continue to find ways to dismiss Shaw and Gwyn for gross misconduct. We should also let the investigation firm find more information on them so we can use it against them. I'll look to Lean to lead this with you regarding these issues. Best regards, Hisham Alway. That demonstrates fairly clearly that they didn't think they had anything on Sean Harvey or Gwyn Williams. They're looking for some excuse to get them off the payroll. As you know, Salim Patel sacked nearly all the top people in down the road. That's why they haven't got a proper management team, which Massimo Cellino is now trying to rebuild. Now, the other interesting thing, I've got copies of lawyers acting for David Haig. And they have, of course, unearthed, I understand, quite a lot of information which suggests wrongdoing by GFH. And they're giving this information now to the government regulatory authority in Dubai, not in Bahrain, because you never get anything investigated in Bahrain, because of course Hisham's father-in-law is the head of the central bank. But Dubai, the GFA Capital Limited, which is the company that actually bought, originally bought Leeds and then sold it, is based in Dubai. It does mean independent people. The Dubai Financial Services Authority are investigating there. But the long arm of Bahrain does not reach Dubai. And purely by chance, I received another letter, which was sent yesterday, to that Jinesh Patel, who is now the CEO of GFH Capital. And stuff he's sending on Twitter, an email, and text from his mobile. In which he states, this is Jinesh Patel, the CEO of GFH Capital in Dubai. The lies being peddled by Hague are just that, lies. His incarceration is a result of Dubai prosecutors taking action. But of course, not quite right, because the Dubai prosecutors haven't taken action. David Hay had now been incarcerated for 9 months. He hasn't been questioned or interrogated. He hasn't been charged with anything. And the British government apparently don't give a damn. Not interested. Remember William Hague, when he was Foreign Secretary? He found 3 days to spare to be prancing about with Angelina Jolie. But they have nothing to do with his similarly named David Hague, who's in Dubai. I'm wondering if Prince Charles, who's been in Saudi Arabia for 6 weeks, intervening about somebody who'd been given 10 years in jail for setting up a website, and he's not even a British citizen. You think Prince Charles might have popped over the border to Dubai, ask about David Hay as a British citizen? But no such luck. Assuming it's not such headline catching. But there you are, this thing is continuing. The other thing David told me, I spoke to him on the phone today, David Hay told me, was that Jinesh Patel claiming that Sports Capital, which is David Hay's company, had no money, wasn't owed anything. David Hay told me that up to date, they received £950,000 on account of the money outstanding. And in January, he's got his costs. And there's another large sum due that's still, as yet, not paid. It's interesting, that wasn't paid by Leeds United. It was paid by Massimo Cellino from his own private company, to in effect, he took over the debt. So he funded the repayment. So one of the claims of GFA Capital, it wasn't legally owned or borrowed, proved to be untrue. It was owed. It's been mostly repaid. There's still some outstanding. So I think it's getting, and of course this whole case made the Charlie Child column today in a national newspaper. So now there's a bit more publicity coming up, and I think there might be a bit more pressure on the three musketeers of GFH and the GFH itself. So listen to this station. What's your internet website?
Is that the first time you've spoken to David since his incarceration?
About 6 months, yes, he rang me. He actually said to me that he'd been very well treated in the prison, and there's a lot of sympathy for him within the organisation, you know, within the system. That apparently they've got some long-winded legal procedure to take place, and there's nothing you can do to speed it up. So there's an innocent man sitting there. The real thing, GFH, he got so much on GFH that they just want him incarcerated, keep him, shut him up. But he has evidence And I'll just read you one more thing. Evidence, if I can find it. Of the fact that Geoface knew, David Hay knew, that they'd taken money at a client, a bank that took money out of clients' accounts to fund the takeover of Leeds United. When David Hay told Salim Patel, his email response was LOL, which apparently is short, not for lots of love, it's short for laugh out loud. Which, so this he knew about it. So, this story will run and run, and I think he's going to get out of control.
Yeah.
As far as GFH are concerned.
Is David Hall?
Then, of course, Football League have been copied in with his lawyer's letters. It very well be that Football League will have to consider whether Salim Patel is a fit and proper person to be a director of a football club. And incidentally, I should say, and I happen to know this, because I advised Sean Harvey on this some time ago, whenever Leeds United comes up on the agenda, he declares an interest, recuses himself, and sometimes even leaves the room while they discuss what to do. And then he comes back and he's instructed what the board decision is, or advised what the board decision is, and then they get on with it. So the suggestion from the mob element and certain Twitter trolls of Follow Leeds United that Harvey is this, that and the other, absolute rubbish. You've got better fish to... You've got bigger fish to fry and better things to do.
In terms of David, when you spoke to him, did he sound hopeful that that maybe there was something on the horizon that this was going to come to an end at any point in the future?
The thing is, I've got to remember, Arabs are a different people to us. We tend to think they're Westerners dressed in nightshirts, but they're not. They have a different attitude and different timescales. And if you have an appointment and you're 2 minutes late, they're deeply offended. Like, I remember times when a time means nothing to them, they just don't turn up. I can remember ringing Patel coming to see me in Monaco. This is 2012, and I arranged to meet him at 12 o'clock. And at 10 to 1, I rang him and said, "Where are you?" He said, "Well, I'm in my room." I said, "We had an appointment 50 minutes ago. Oh, he said, "All right, I'll come down then." I mean, so time means nothing to them. So therefore, there is no sense of urgency about anything. And the message I got when I was dealing with them, basically the conclusion I came to, is that they also think if you leave problems long enough, they go away. Which is why there's so much outstanding stuff at Leeds United at the moment, because they simply didn't attend to them. And all this fuss about Leeds City holding being wound up, this, that and the other, is all because they just ignored the £40,000. I mean, it just isn't worth it. Meanwhile, what happens then, of course, is Leeds United's name stinks as far as credit's concerned, because it makes it more difficult to arrange other meetings. Don't forget that Massimo said his plan was to buy the ground back within 6 months. The one time I believe he had the money lined up. But when all the other stuff started coming out, the would-be lenders just did a runner.
In terms of when you spoke to David, did he give any indication that with the work all his legal team had been doing that he felt like he would get his day sooner rather than later, or is he still completely in the dark?
Well, again, time sooner or later, that's not in his... What I can say, he has got some very serious international experts examining every kind of thing you can think of. And he just assured me that everything, every day, every week, they find something else wrong with GFH. which they're biding their time, and in due course they'll bring it out. Which, of course, will be much more damaging to GFH. Could be seriously damaging.
There was a lot of speculation about David's health when he was first incarcerated. Did he say how he was generally in terms of his physical well-being?
I mean, I sent him a message 3 months ago saying Weight Watchers wanted him to do a TV advert for them. I gather he'd lost 3 stone. The only other thing is that he sent me a letter. He said, "Don't say I told you so," because I told him not to go near Dubai. I didn't trust the, wouldn't trust the Bahrainis. Wouldn't trust the buggers. The GFH, and of course he did go, and the rest of the said history. Anyway, it's nice to know he's in good spirits, he's in fighting form, and he's got some very, very good international people working for him. So I'm hopeful that all's well will end well, and that he'll come out and over pursue his business career. And meanwhile, I also hope the GFH get their just desserts, if only for the damage they've inflicted on Leeds United in these 16 months that they own the club, and the eight months before that, and they're doing their so-called investigations, their due diligence, and the club's activities were totally frozen under the terms of the contract. And the good news, we've got nothing to do with it. I just remembered it. I read in the Times this morning that the American ambassador to Britain loves Yorkshire and thinks Leeds City is the most exciting city in the country, far better than London. So that's a cheerful note, which these people should like. He said, loves the city centre, loves Leeds people, loves Yorkshire people. So there you are. Totally irrelevant to our previous conversation, but I thought worthwhile slipping in a bit of good news. And of course, 3 points. At Reading, after the disappointment the previous Saturday. So actually, of the last 6 games, we've won 3, drawn 2 and lost 1. And that's promotion form. That's championship form. 11 points out of 18. So I reckon if you get 2 points a game, you win win the title. Well, 11's not too bad. And we've jumped up a few places. And we're now just 1 point around about 5-6 clubs. So Saturday's game will be very interesting. Now, have we got Sam? Is it Millwall?
Millwall on Saturday, Valentine's Day against Millwall.
Oh, well, what a lovely gift. 3 points for gift will be. But Millwall's struggling as well. So why don't we go out of our normal game? You just give the plug for it. Don't forget the ordinary people, ordinary fans. If you fancy a luxury day out at Elland Road, as guests of Radio Yorkshire, then you simply have to give the answer to a simple question and make a choice of 3 alternatives. There are 10 tickets available, 10 seats, 10 meals. They get more than 10 inquiries, which we will, then the name goes in the hat and they're drawn out at random. So over to you, Sam, for this plug.
Yep, all you have to do, we've got until midnight tonight, actually, to get your final answers in for this one. Lots of entries, with it being Valentine's Day. The question, which former Leeds United footballer currently commentates on Leeds United Live on DAB for Radio Yorkshire? Is it A, Rob Hulse, B, Richard Cresswell, or C, Robbie Blake? Text Yorks and your answer, A, B, or C, to 84383. Text lines close at midnight tonight. See all the terms, conditions and rules at radioyorkshire.co.uk, and that's for a VIP ticket to the game against Millwall at Elland Road this weekend on Valentine's Day.
Sam, just repeat the numbers again, because as usual, people probably scrabbling to find a pencil.
The number, if you don't know it, text Yorks and your answer, A, B or C, A, Rob Hulse, B, Richard Cresswell, or C, Robbie Blake, to the question, which former Leeds United footballer currently commentates on Leeds United Live on DAB for Radio Yorkshire, to the text number 84383. So A, B, or C to 84383, starting your text with the word Yorks.
You're becoming a professional this
time. Yeah, well, I don't know about that. Still a way to go.
But before we finish, let's finish with Leeds United, because you raised a point about the police want a more active role in tackling yobs, and that we have one of the highest records the worst record in the league on bad behaviour. I'd only make one point about this, to be fair to Leeds fans. Firstly, of course, it really depends on the individual police force, some of whom are far more are far stricter than others, and some of them have a very cosy relationship with the club. I'm particularly thinking of Carlisle. I remember a few years ago, we were playing Carlisle in a semi-final of the Johnson Paints Trophy, which I renamed the Johnson Cheats Trophy. It came to a penalty shootout at Bunton Park, and the referee were tossed about which end to take the penalties, and it came down that we would kick into the Leeds fans' end. However, the safety officer, Carlisle, interrupted and said, no, you've got to play looking into the Carlisle United end for safety reasons. The cods were up, but did it. You remember then, some of you may remember, in fact, then what happened is guys were shining lasers into the Leeds players' eyes when they're taking the penalties. Coins were thrown. When we lost the kick, the shootout, the pitch was invaded, and some of our players got kicked and punched. And we complained to the police, and the chief of police said, after a thorough investigation, he was satisfied nothing undue took place. We just go to show that all police authorities are not equal. Now, when I became chairman of Leeds in 2005, Leeds did have a hooligan problem, but to be fair, it was a case of give a dog a bad name, you know, and hang him. And the result, and the fact is that whenever Leeds went away, police took special measures and this and that and the other. And what we did to stop it, or to control it, virtue, if you remember, we formed the Leeds Members Club, and you had to be a Leeds member to get a ticket for an away game. Furthermore, before that, someone used to go to the Supporters Club and General Stars. The club had no control over it. But every ticket that went to a player for a supporter for an away game, we recorded what their ticket number and seat number was. And members were reminded that if they gave that ticket away and the recipient caused trouble, then they would take the blame for it and be banned. And we also used to send some of our own stewards, the spotters, to help home stewards. And our recorded behaviour improved considerably. So much so that then, you know, that had two good effects. First of all, the clubs relaxed a bit and used to give us bigger ticket allocations, which we always wanted because we always sold out. The other thing is the police were then less inclined to push the kick-off times at unsocial hours. You know, we used to kick-off times used to be 11:30, 12 o'clock, so and so forth, or early in the evening or late in the evening, all of which is discouraging and inconvenient to the Leeds fans. Now, what happened was, of course, when Salim Patel came in, big I am, all that went to hell, so they sacked half the staff, didn't bother it. If you remember, I think even the members' dues, they were selling the tickets to anybody because the Leeds members weren't coming. And then, of course, so they changed the style of entertainment. That was down to, I think that was responsible for Deborah Ware, and that and the Christmas Carol concert. And so the whole family spirit slowly ebbed away. So the easiest way to start re-establishing it is to re-establish the members' club. One time we had near 30,000 members, and it was a good source of income to the club. But at the same time, you know, we formed all the regional members' clubs. We used to go around and see them once a year and had an evening, a Q&A. I think most of that went out the window. So there's this division there between club and fans. It should be brought back. We have to build on it properly. We have to spend money on it. It's worth it. And Lorna Tinkey did a good job as club secretary. And they sacked her without notice when she just discovered she got cancer. How about that? Well, discovering you've got cancer and discovering you're out of a job. That's it. That's the way the Bahrainis treat their staff. Like dirt. If they're not Bahrainis. So Massimo and his new team have got a big job to do, and it'll take time. It can be done. Proved it can be done. It ought to be done again. For the benefit of the club and the benefit of the fans.
And of course, this week we had the new TV rights, the Premier League and BT agreeing their deal, the TV rights now worth over £5 billion. What did you make of this latest influx of money coming into the English game?
Well, I had to smile because a little bit of history is that in the old days, BBC and ITV used to have a cartel, used to make a joint bid. And of course, they kept the prices down. The last one they paid was £3 million. It was ridiculous. And in fact, and they wouldn't allow have a shirt advertising either. Obviously, ITV didn't want shirt advertising. And the BBC used their excuse that their charter forbade advertising. Which, of course, wasn't true, because when they showed Formula One, of course, they had Durex painted on the tail of every lorry, every car, but that's another story. Anyway, the late Bob Maxwell that rang up the... because he was involved in Oxford United at the time. He rang up the attorney, the chief attorney of Great Britain. Said, was he aware that the BBC were breaking the law and invoking his name? And so it stopped it, and of course we got advertising the next year. But then, in 1990... Oh, then what happened is that ITV broke the cartel, and greatly helped by David Dean, Greg Dyke, who, funnily enough, is now chairman of the FA, was then chief executive of ITV, and they negotiated a deal. In fact, the late Ron Nogent and I negotiated a deal with what we call British Satellite Broadcasting. That was the same time as Sky. And they came in. We agreed a deal of £11 million, I think. So Dean and ITV came in, topped it by £1 million, I think. So ITV got the deal. And I was determined, on Nodes, and I was determined to smash that. So secretly, we met Rupert Murdoch in his penthouse in London, St James's, overlooking St James's Park. And we said, we can deliver a league TV rights to you. We want £50 million. Murdoch said, gulped and said, I'm sure we can put up that in time. I said, no, we want £50 million the first year and more, and our RPI for the rest of the contract. And after a bit of talking around, he agreed. So Ron and I went back, started doing our electioneering. To cut a long story short, David Dean tried to screw up the deal, but it went through. So it's 1992, we got £50 million. £50 million. That's for the Premiership, Premier League football. And look where it is now. The joke about it is that I'll go off the point a bit, but Sky were struggling financially, as were British Satellite Broadcasting. For older listeners may remember, the argument was that Sky's aerial was round, and British Satellite Broadcasting was like a rectangle. Anyway, they merged. Although it's supposed to be a merger, all the satellite people got the bullet, and it became Sky, and it became a very successful organisation that it is today. But 22 years ago, 50 million, now 5 billion. Now I'll tell you another story on the same line, which makes sure what silly decisions some people make. We're in the Premiership. Dave Richard was the then chairman. And we said, Premiership, we'll do a deal. And we said to the football, the Premiership said to the Football League, let us take over your TV rights. We'll sell the whole lot as a package. And we, the Premiership, will give you, the Football League, 20% of what we take. We almost got there when two or three clubs, and I think Mr. Scally of Gillingham was one, but I'm not sure, did a deal behind our back, went to Setanta, and did a deal for, I don't know, a few million pounds. And of course, you may remember that Setanta went bust, which almost made some of the football clubs go bust as well. You just think of £1 billion a year going to the Football League. That mean about 700 million of that billion would have gone to the Championship. So what's that? Nearly £30 million a club? Instead of which they're going to get, I think, five under some solidarity payment on a new deal. So there you are. Now to Screws, folk. What are we going to do about it? Let's just hope that the Premier League spend the money properly. Though I fear, as Alan Sugar said this morning, although of course I must say he said it 20 years ago as well, he said TV money is like prune juice. Goes in one end, comes out the other end, straight into the players' pockets. On the other hand, football players don't get as much as baseball players, American football players get. It's all a matter of demand. The only trouble is, of course, it will continue to adversely affect our English, the like England team, our national team, because English players don't get the same chance to develop. But that's mammon for you. I think the other thing that's come on about, dear to my heart, I think dear to my, because people don't realise how serious it is the referendum, to whether we leave the European Union or stay there. My personal view is that we should stay in the EU, but on our terms. Otherwise, we should come out. But there's no reason why the referendum couldn't have been held towards the end of this year. Because Cameron's been talking about it for so long, he could have been negotiating by now. And all those people who claim fear, doom and gloom, if we're outside the EU, England, if UK is outside the EU, I don't believe it. The Norwegian economy, through its oil backed, are the richest in the world. They're not in the EU. And nor are Switzerland. And the thing is, the rest of the world, there's plenty of markets outside Europe. The other important thing to remember is that we buy more from Europe than we sell to them. So if they started putting restrictive patches on us, they would lose more than we would. If we're outside the EU, then their bloody Spanish fishermen have to stop stealing all our fish and then selling it back to us. And our English farmers are going through a terrible time at the moment. And Yorkshire farmers are no exception. Will get better prices for their product. And finally, without all these stupid EU rules and safety rules and regulation, this and that, the other, things might even be cheaper, more competitive. So it's a double-edged sword. Well, it could be argued it's a double-headed penny. Heads we win and heads we win. Providing Cameron stops talking tough and long-term, starts acting tough, short-term, because the uncertainty is certainly affecting. I mean, if I was still in business and I was making decisions, I would certainly consider the effect of the uncertainty on my investment decisions. I might be tempted to put them off until I knew what was happening. But it's politicians, especially those who've never done a day's work in their life in the real world, wouldn't understand that. Had to laugh when Clegg was being interviewed recently. He was asked, what work have you done? What work have you done in the real world? And he said, well, I was at Harvard, then I became an economic advisor. I ask you. Every MP, I agree with Alan Thompson, the Labour MP, every would-be MP should work at least 5 years in the real world. And that doesn't include media, PR, or research. He's getting your hand dirty in a real job, in a real industry. Then they will know the real implications of what political decisions are. So there you are, on that happy note, Sam. Wish your listeners happy evening, happy week, and hopefully 3 points against Millwall.